So the information that they have, they said it meets the assessment criteria of a small and declining population, because based on the small number of individuals there. So they had counted on the 2014 estimate, then 698 mature caribou. They calculated that as an 80% decline over 34 years. So the previous...
So they have been counted in the past?
Yes, they have. There's limitations. So when they say that 80% decline, so the original number that they used was wasn't like a full survey that was done. It was back, remember the 80s, but they kind of surveyed a couple of spots. I say they, it was mostly, I can't remember who's involved. The province of Newfoundland, Labrador, province of Quebec at that time.
Oh, was that estimate of 5,000?
Yes.
That was a flyover, one flyover, right?
Right. Yeah. So the original number that they started, what they're comparing it to, is this one back in the 80s. It was a flyover, and they also did some community interviews, I think, and got some sense of how many animals there used to be. And based on just that limited survey, there was an assessment made of around 5,000 animals. The first time that we've done a full, comprehensive survey was back in 2014. And during that time, that's when they counted 698 mature animals. So if you're looking at 5,000 compared to less than 700, it looks like a big decline. And so that was one of the criteria they used in their assessment. The other thing to note is that this assessment was done 2016. After their assessment was done, another census was flown by Torngat Secretariat and provinces of Newfoundland, Labrador, and Quebec, and probably Nakavik. Nakavik was there. And they found, actually, some of your books might have the handouts. Oh, here it is, this one here. So this is another survey that was done, and I can give you if you don't have it. Notice that, again, some of the things, if you compare it to the 2014 survey, some of the results are starting to show positive indicators. There is some question about the information that they used, but they did it based on what they had. So it is going to be a consideration when the minister makes their recommendation.
Yes, that 5,000 number is a flawed number, though, right? And I think it's recognized because that was one flyover, and you could not tell which were George River caribou and which were Torngat Mountains caribou.
Yes, that's another important part of it. So when that census was done, we had lots of George River caribou, and their range was really big and then overlapping. So there's also some speculation about whether or not they were counting George River caribou in that first estimate. So the second thing that Kosiwik had a concern for was that they said not only is it small, and they said declining, but they said they predict that it will continue to decline because of two main things. One is harvest, because harvest is still happening, and the second one is a decrease in habitat quality, and that's mostly climate change because, shrubification. So the vegetation that's in the park is starting to change, becoming more shrubby, right? So that was a concern. So that's how what they used to base that.
To look at people's inuit about careful.
We'll be speaking to both. We haven't had our meetings with Inuit Nation yet, but we will be.
So what they say is they will decrease in so many years, maybe 30 to 40 years. Right now, they declined north anyway.
Yeah.
And when they start coming to Sardic area in summertime, they came in later after so many years. That's why I believe in Inuit people that most of them are gone, but they know their own land. Right now they're doing it, and I believe that's true. In 30 or 40 more years, they will come back, but no, I don't know. I'm only saying that anyway, because we moved in 1959 to Maine. There was no caribou town, not in summertime or in wintertime. Now they're gone. You don't see any caribou anymore, none whatsoever.
Yep, it's definitely a hard situation. I think nobody thinks we're in a good situation with caribou right now. But, that's what the hope is, that they're going to come back. But that's why people keep coming out, is what can we do to help them come back? So in terms of our presentation today, as part of the question is, does the federal government have a role in helping them come back? What can we do?
We did look for caribou when they started declining. There was none around Nabato, there was none around Hebron, there was none around Sudley, and there was none around Snapak area. And whatsoever. That's what we were trying to kill in the area. Caribou. And behind Napa, there were caribou and polar bears. There were almost together, living together, maybe not really, but there were some terrible around Killiniq area, only north from Napak area. From south from Napak area, were going up south, none was not one area. That's all I want to know if you guys talk to. If you guys ever talk to people who know the area better than we do.
Well, that'll be part of the process. I mean, we're coming out now and asking whether or not caribou should be put under the Federal Species at Risk Act. If they are listed under the Federal Species at Risk Act, that's going to be the next step. We'll be coming out again to talk to those knowledge holders and people that know about the caribou and make sure we get that information. Because a lot of this information is not written down anywhere, so we need to talk to people and get that included with everything else there, you know, with all the studies and everything that are out there already. So that would be the next step. So this is, should we, federal government, do something? The next step is, what should we do? And that's usually one of the first things. We have to talk to people and get the information.
What else can you do? We've been under a hunting ban 6-7 years now. And what more can you do?
So let's just say, I guess, obviously the more you want to talk about, but I do. What people want to hear now is, like, what now?
Yeah.
I guess for me, it's like, if you turn around and you make the eastern caribou herd as, look at it as one, will that then start putting some restrictions on the animals that are abundant in other places? Because a lot of people's theory right now is that a lot of the animals that was in Labrador are gone west. But yet, you look on Facebook, these guys over there are killing them left, right, and center because there's so many now. But yet, like, nothing is being done. Here we are, and I think we're the only indigenous race out there that's not harvesting to a level that is assuring we have caribou tomorrow. So I guess what I would like to know is if we turn around and say, yes, list them, will that guarantee, say, the leaf herd probably has Georgia animals amongst them, guarantee that that herd won't go down to a point that animals won't come back easily?
Right. I don't know if I have a definite answer for you. There's a couple of things. We'll try to cover that as we go on. That's kind of the next part, like what happens if it gets listed. So the reason I don't have definite answers right now is because that's the conversation that we would have next, is we would have to identify what those threats are.
But see, the sad reality is the science and all that kind of stuff is out there, but the people with the knowledge are afraid to say anything because there's so many different groups that are involved in it. I mean, come out of your shell and just say what people want to hear. What I mean?
Yeah.
There was geese that flew into a plane there a few years ago and the plane crashed and they said that the animals came from Labrador based on the isotopes and everything that's in the digging animal. Mm-hmm. So they can do the same thing with caribou.
Yeah. So that'd be one of the things that we can do, so more science, some help with the monitoring, support community stuff, right? Community level monitoring. On the enforcement side, which is kind of like one of the biggest things we usually talk about, maybe we'll have that as its own little discussion. Maybe I'll go through a few more slides first.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but this topic is touchy.
No, it's frustrating. I'm not, yeah. It's
here we are now, I don't know how many years with the ban, but yet we see people all around us harvesting.
Yet they've been sanctioned that whole thing.
I'm going to come back to that one. I'm not skipping it. And I know there's no way around it because we're going to talk about it a lot after we go through this next stuff. So just to finish off the assessment. So eastern migratory, similar stuff. So again, facing imminent extirpation. So this is, again, those four groups. This includes the George River. So these assessments meet assessment criteria for decline, again, due to decline of over 80% over three generations. And that 80%, again, is talking about that group of four. If we were just to look at George River, that percent decline is even higher. It's in the high 90s, right? Because we've gone from 800,000 to less than 8,000. So it's more significant if we're just looking at George. But with those four groups together, it's still very significant. The Leaf River is still decreasing. Not as fast as the George River, but the Leaf River is also still decreasing. And those other ones are decreasing as well. So I know there's some thought that maybe our George River have moved into the Leaf. But if that happened, then the Leaf is still going down. We would have expected the Leaf rivers to go up.
You will have to do another census this year.
Yeah.
Because of our unusual winter, where we've had a lot of avalanches. I'd say the numbers of our caribou herd is down some more because of those avalanches.
It's been a hard winter on us. We imagine what it's like on caribou, right?
We had a community feast of the Sula.
Something to point out for eastern migratory. So they're also predicted to decline because of harvest, which is what we'll come back to talk about that one. and climate change, again, the change in habitat. But another one in eastern migratory range is development. So that one wasn't in the park because the park's basically a national park, and there's not a lot of development going on up there. But within the range of the eastern migratory, there's things like roads, hydroelectric, mining, all those things are impacting caribou too. So that's another concern in this one. So I think we've talked about the caribou themselves. I think a lot of this discussion part starting to go to the next section, so I'll just move on into the next section. So the next section, this is a listing recommendation. So that was all the assessment. That's what's been done so far. These next two ones are what Mika and I are kind of doing right now. This is the listing. So this is the decision. So we have the information, the assessment. That's what it was based on. We noted some limitations on the data, especially for Thorngate Mountains, caribou, those surveys. So now we're going to take that information and what we've heard today and show you the process. So just to show that kind of the timeline that we've been working on. So this assessment, Kosiwit did their initial assessment on Thorngate Mountains back in 2016, the fall of 2016. And in the spring, they assessed the Eastern Migratory. That's when they did that assessment as endangered, and they made this report. In the fall of 2017, they sent that to the Minister of the Environment, and that kind of kicks off the process in SARA. And then the minister had to post a response statement, how we're going to consult. Remember I told you some species, we don't come out to communities all the time. We just maybe just interact more one-on-one with the indigenous governments. But the minister decided for her statement on this, on caribou, that we were going to do an extended consultation, which gives us enough time to come into community. And this, so the minister solicits public input. That's what we're doing. The public comment period closed on October 22nd of 2018. So last fall, the public comment period closed on this consultation. But because it's so important that we talk to indigenous communities, we have a lot of flexibility to make sure we can hear from everyone. So we're still doing this process. So the next part is then, once we hear from everyone and get all the comments, and we provide that to the minister, what happens? Decision has to be made, and that's what this part is. So the minister forwards the report, everything she's heard from our consultations, talking to people, and that goes to this governor and council. So those are the elected officials down here. So those are elected officials in Ottawa. They actually make that decision. So our minister doesn't make the decision. She only makes a recommendation. So it's actually elected officials that have to make the decision because there's financial and ministerial responsibilities that come with that. So they have to make that decision. And again, just note, at that point, there's an additional 9-month consultation opportunity. It's not really, I wouldn't say, a consultation like we're doing now. We won't be coming back yet. This is a Government of Canada process that they have to follow. Anytime they change a single word in this, they have to go through a full process. And that's what that process is. This act holds them responsible to make sure that they follow these processes. So we did all that. So we did the assessment. We do this process to decide whether or not it should be added. So this part over here is the what happens if it's added. These are the things that would happen to any species that get listed under the act. And again, there's a few key parts. So recovery planning and the stewardship act. They are found that they're not doing a good enough job. There's a thing that's called a safety net approach. That's kind of like, the last step.
So when you say they, who are you referring to?
Sorry, they, yes. So one, provincial authorities are usually the ones who manage caribou directly. When I'm talking about the safety net, I'm talking about the Federal Species at Risk Act. So that would be the federal government for the safety net. It's usually done through an order of parliament. So one way of thinking about the safety net, our government, like the Government of Canada, our minister, will have to do an assessment of what's already out there. So Wildlife Act, the Newfoundland Labrador Endangered Species Act, could be things like Transportation Act, Fisheries Act, all kinds of things. They look at all those things and kind of see if they can do anything to protect caribou or their habitat. If there's any gaps in protection, our minister can invoke what's called an order. So that's the safety net. So if there's something missing, there is a clause in here where we can add different protections to fill those gaps.
I gotta say something.
Is that gonna be
good? I don't like it.
No.
if you're gonna use an example of what the federal government did in protecting endangered species, you look at Mealy Mountains caribou. Mm-hmm. They're being slaughtered. Every year up to now, they're being slaughtered. And I don't need to say by who. People in our southern territory got caribou on their table all the time. And I hope you don't use that as, and if that's what's common, if we put the caribou as endangered, if you're gonna use Mealy Mountains caribou as an example of how provincial and federal government have protected an endangered species there, is that what we got to look forward to? They got enforcement. They don't use it. We don't have any enforcement here. We got conservation. How in the world are we going to protect? And that's the reason we're here. How are we going to protect the caribou? Who's going to protect them? Right now, there's nobody. It's not the provincial government. It's not the federal government.
That's good. I'm going to come back to that because the harvest and the limitations of these protections is good to understand when we're trying to make our comments on whether or not you think they should be listed. So I'll come back to the Mealy Mountain as an example under enforcement. But I'll just finish off this slide first, Ron. So they have tried putting boots on the ground. So logistically, it's expensive. Labrador is a large area to cover, so it takes a lot of resources. Two, they have had issues in the past where they've had confrontation from people that they've been approaching. So they have health and safety concerns for their officers. And then three is some of the uncertainty when we're talking about the justifications of conservation and infringing rights. That's a very high-level thing, which is outside of the endangered species legislations. That's a treaty right. So those kind of things. So that's in the courts. So that's why sometimes it takes a really long time to get a decision. So for provincial efforts so far, something else to keep in mind is that, again, our province in the past few years have had some resource issues. In fact, that we don't have any. So they have trouble getting staff. It costs a lot of money. On the federal side, we've been a bit slow in getting. So the act came into place in 2003. So basically, Canadian Wildlife Service, we don't do enforcement. We have another branch called the Wildlife Enforcement that will, do these kind of protection things. They're the enforcement people. We got a new act that came out around 2003. It took a little while for us to get staffed up because Canadian Wildlife Service, historically, are migratory bird managers, right? So when we got these things and said, okay, now you're doing snakes and reptiles and caribou and this, whatever. So it took a while to get some people some expertise. And of course, with any new act, it takes a long time to figure out how to make it work. But boreal caribou, including Mealy Mountain, is one of the species that are really pushing us in terms of getting some of those things figured out, because lots of non-governmental organizations, provinces, territories are taking the government to court in terms of challenging a lot of these things and how they're being implemented. The case now in Alberta, where someone's taking the government of Canada to court because they're saying Alberta's not doing a good enough job and you haven't provided enough protection. So in terms of boots on the ground enforcement, to be honest, my opinion is that this is not where the strength of the Species at Risk Act is for this situation. But some of the things that are happening with boreal caribou, Mealy Mountain, Lac Joseph, Red Wine Mountain, and I'll get to it a little bit later, but we provide resources so we can support the province in doing a more effective job. So we have an agreement coming out with the province very shortly, and I'll get into that. It's called Conservation Agreement, Section 11 Agreement, which outlines some of their responsibilities, what they're going to do, and where the Government of Canada is going to support them in doing that. And it's going to come with a bit of resources to support that. So hiring more people, doing more monitoring, getting more engagement in the communities, more enforcement actions, those kind of things. So those kind of things are coming. They're just really slow. So we're just kind of catching up. So it's a bit hard to compare what's happened with boreal, just in terms of, I think it's been pushing a lot and we've been learning a lot. That's been slow. But I think, we've learned a lot in terms, as a department, in terms of how to run SARA and a lot of these things that are in it and how to use them. They're just starting to come out now.
So if they're put on, if we all agree to have the caribou put on, Georgia the caribou and the Permian put on the endangered list, all it's going to be, by the sounds of what you're saying, is written on paper.
No, we want to make sure that doesn't happen.
Because up to now, nothing is up. There's a ban. Mm-hmm. And I was all for listing them, but I'm changing my mind because by the time something is done by the federal government and the provincial government, of a caribou woman. So I'm really turning away from listing them as endangered because the long process, I don't think what we do is going to help any, because we'll be dead and gone, and the caribou will be dead and gone too. It's going to be too long.
Once the species get once these populations get listed, they're supposed to be drafted within 1 year. So, it's an immediate timeline. You know how long it takes to do a recovery strategy. It's a big undertaking.
If they are listed, and they suddenly bounce back to 400,000, they can't be unlisted?
No, that's not correct. They can be unlisted. It would follow the same process. We would come out and consult with you and ask you if they should be downlisted. A recent example of that is a peregrine falcon has now just been assessed as not at risk. And that's the same process. We call it a listing process because species more often get added. But it's the same process for also coming down then.
Well, if I can just say something, though, on the Torngat, or the Torngat Mountains Cooperative Management Board has written to the Minister of Environment, who's also the Minister responsible for Parks Canada, to not list the Torngat Mountains caribou, but rather put in place, look at some sort of Inuit management regime, so that there are also protocols around managing the caribou. There's a couple of reasons why the Property Management Board made that decision was because, one, they didn't really give any credit to the first census that 5,000 caribou were. And second was that they feel that there's only two real censuses out there. That's the 2014 one and the 2017 census. They feel are the only two accurate counts on the Torquemada Mountains caribou herd. So what they've done, and take a look at how the George River caribou herd was managed or mismanaged, whichever way you want to look at it. The Property Management Board felt that they should write a letter to the minister, ask to say, listen, don't, minister, don't list the caribou, but rather give us Inuit an opportunity to manage the caribou herd first and come up with a management plan, an all-Inuit management plan on how that caribou can be managed. That herd can be managed. So that, I think, is the only first written response to the minister regarding the Torquemada Mountains. That's not the George River caribou herd, but just the Torquemada Mountains.
Yeah, and an important note there is that a significant portion of that is within a national park. Yeah. So our minister has some jurisdictional responsibilities within that park. The other group, Eastern Migratory, is mostly on provincial land, so we don't necessarily, it would still be under primarily management of provincial, I guess, and even territorial, because we still have that little piece of Nunavut at the top, right?
The only ones that are harvesting Torquemada animals now are collecting Inuit.
Yeah.
Not figured on this side, we're not impacting them.
Yeah. Well, the numbers, that should be taken into account. And on the George River side, their numbers are being recorded, and they self-imposed a number. Yeah. So we'll get an update that in a couple of weeks.
Are you saying that you can hunt the George and the Torquemada here from here?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. He's ANG beneficiary in those land claims.
When they put a ban on our George River here, I made a couple of trips on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we were allowed to hunt.
Yeah, in the park, you're allowed to hunt in the park, but yeah, it's on.
But you got to be able to prove it, don't you, if you're safe-faced with law enforcement?
Yeah. They didn't say that we would have to take along GPS and the camera.
This word's mixed up because you got the federal government in a park saying you can kill animals, and we got the provincial people coming up here and say, in small print, you're not allowed to kill any animals.
Outside the park,
or Torquemada. This is what the provincial government told us.
We did go a couple of years after the ban up in Torquemada Mountain, and to our understanding, they were banned too.
Introduction of any animal.
The provincial government told us. So you're telling us a different story. And if you're going to work together, why provincial government come in, federal government, with two different things, split them in the middle? What are we supposed to do?
Yes, and that's why I think the CNB made a recommendation to put it back in Inuit hands, come up with an Inuit management structure.
But CNB don't rule all of Labrador.
It only rules in
the provincial boundary, the federal boundary of the park.
Yeah, see that?
That doesn't work either. They don't work for us.
But the province says that if you bring an animal from the Torquemada or from Quebec into Labrador, mm-hmm. outside of those two areas, yeah. you could be charged.
And see, that's, I think, I don't want to say too much. I'm not speaking to this Parks Canada right now, but that's a colonialistic attitude of the province, where they take all control without engaging us. And given us true information, which they never, ever have done, and they got no intention to. But if we took control of our herd, what UPCART is trying to do, and now I think with Yinu, we can apply pressure to Yinu, but I don't know all the politics around that. But there are opportunities to make things work.
So I don't think I fully understood your question, Rob. A few points of clarification. So if the caribou were listed under the Federal Species at Risk Act, the province would still be the ones who manage the harvest. We're not taking over responsibility for enforcement. On non-federal lands, it's still the responsibility of the province, whether or not they're listed under SARA. There's flexibility on the Act, especially where it comes to Aboriginal treaty rights. The other layer on there is, of course, we have a land claim agreement. So those are all different layers. It's not the federal government coming in to replace what the province is doing. We're coming in to support what they do and help them do it more effectively. So it's kind of trying to just understand that it doesn't replace those laws. They still remain as the managers of enforcement of harvest. there is a difference, though, in harvest that we need to recognize between indigenous and non-indigenous harvest. The non-indigenous harvest is very clear. None. When it comes to indigenous harvest, it becomes more of a legal discussion. And again, the land claim adds another aspect on that as well. This is kind of like our initial, like, do you think federal government has a role? This is a question. When we get into the actual discussion of, okay, what do we do? It will, we'll identify, like, we'll have open meetings probably for initial drafting, but we will have select people in each community and they'll have specific roles and it'll be much more involved. So if we can count on you, we'll send you as much information as you want. But I say that a bit joking, but yes, we can definitely provide that information. And again, if you're interested in more of these documents, because there's a lot of them, we also don't want to give everybody too much. You know, it takes a little while to go through a lot of these things. Just follow up with me and we can go through a lot more and I can provide you lots of information. So
before you go on, yeah? I mean, how bad does the number or population have to be before the government puts their foot in and starts doing stuff?
For us, the starting point is that COSELIC assessment. So it starts when COSELIC does their assessment of a species and they're requested to do those. Right? So it gets...
I mean, I just use this as an example. If you killed all the cows on the island of Newfoundland, does that mean the cows are in danger?
If they're...
Or endangered, whatever?
Yeah.
But yet the government will turn around and get cows from elsewhere in the country and bring them over to rejuvenate the population of cows in Newfoundland. But yet, how bad would a number have to get, say, in Labrador or in the Torngats or even on Baffin Island before the government starts possibly introducing some new animals to those areas?
Right. So, there's two different points.
Well, there's still some animals in other places that they could take from.
Yeah. So, I'm going to break that into two different responses. So, first one is, if we can assess the species before they become at risk, there's still those, you know, the ongoing provincial management things. If those are done without, you know, too many things going wrong, they can usually maintain those populations. For a lot of our wildlife populations here in Labrador, we don't have an issue. Most of our species are doing very well. So this public comment period says October 22nd, 2018. Obviously, we're going to continue to work with indigenous communities here in Labrador until we've heard from everybody. So at these meetings, you can provide things. Mika's writing down notes. But if you have comments and things later, because if you're like me, it takes me a day or two to think, like, oh, I should have asked this or I should have said this, feel free to send me an email. We can include that as well. So we're going to continue to collect these up. I feel we're going to be working on this until May at least. Then the next step is we're going to provide that along with COSELIC assessment information. The minister makes a recommendation based on what our consultation reports here and that COSELIC assessment, right? We're seeing more resources come into Labrador in the next while. So if you have ideas of things you'd like to do and you feel you need more support, please contact us.
Will we ever have a terrible Labrador again?
I think, well, you're going to see harvest is continuing in the park, but that's hard to get to for some people. I think the idea is... I think we might see... You might see an indigenous harvest, but it's going to be very small. It won't look like what you remember from 30 years ago. The non-indigenous harvest might take a really, really, really long time to come back. But I mean, when caribou start to recover, they can recover fairly rapidly. So I'm going to thank everyone for coming. Again, here's my information. You can email, phone me. But so everyone doesn't go home too heavy brains, we're going to lighten it by giving a few prizes here. So if you get your name written on the sheet.